They tuck it away in one foot inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode number 84, The Burrowers. My name's Matthew Turner, alongside my co-hosts Anthony Fitzpatrick and Stephen Collins. How are you doing, boys?
We're 0-5.
Yeah, doing well, thanks. All good.
Good, good, good. Apologies for the delay if you've been waiting for us live. Some people don't know when 8 o'clock is, and that's fine. No worries, Ant. It's okay.
You know, our listeners like a good college football podcast with lots of details. So, you know, I have to do that. I can't rush these things. Perfection takes time.
Talking of perfection, you look like you've been trimmed and shaved and preened, Ant. Are you sporting a makeover?
No, I've just trimmed. I've just, like, tried to make myself look presentable. Just for you, Steve. You know, I knew you'd be on the podcast today, so I want to look good for you.
You look very smart. Very smart.
You do indeed.
I appreciate it.
Give us a preview of what's going to be on that college football podcast when it drops.
So we've just had a review of the weekend that's just gone by. Obviously, one of the big titans of college football lost this weekend. You know, completely negating what we said the other week. There were two teams far and above anyone else, and one of them went on many high scoring games this week. Two games went over 100 points. A lot went up into the 80s and the 90s. It was not a weekend to be a defensive coordinator in college football. So yeah, tune in for that. It's a lot of good games on show, and Ryan also did a segment on some possible college head coaches who could be coming up to the NFL soon for either head coach jobs of their own or for coordinator positions. So yeah, got a lot to look forward to with it.
Fantastic, sounds like a good listen. Don't forget to hit up our Discord channel. You'll get to talk to us and chat about everything from the Lions to the rest of the NFL, other sports, and pretty much everything really. So hit us up if you want to be a part of that. DM us. Our DMs are open on Twitter. We'll give you a link. You can join us and chat. Otherwise, don't forget to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and on Twitch. We much appreciate that. Just want to highlight, because I have promised, if anyone does go and review us on Apple Podcasts, I'm going to highlight that straight up. And I've got to throw out some big love to Ashley Soden, one of our biggest fans, the guy who actually gave, and I think the suggestion to go ahead and look at coordinators and head coaches and what have you, who could be coming up from the college area to the NFL. He gave us a review, 5 stars, and it said, "I listened to 3 Lions podcasts, the Pride of Detroit one, the Pride podcast, and this one. The college pod is great for getting informed on prospects before the draft, even if they roast me every week. And the preview and review shows are a great way to get analysis to compare to your opinions. They deserve a lot more exposure than they currently get." Thank you very much, Ash. That means a lot to us to have that down permanently in writing. I'm sorry that you get roasted, but if you don't want to get roasted, support a better team. Moving on with this show, we've got the Lions news from the past few days, and then we're going to have a look at Bengals at Lions. And we'll start off with some sad news, really, that Frank Ragnow has confirmed that his move to IR is going to be for the rest of the season. Now, he's had surgery on his turf toe-like injury. Evan Brown, presumably, is now going to start the rest of the season at centre. And to be fair to Evan Brown, he's come in and he has been not the worst centre in the league so far. And, I mean, considering where we thought our O-line depth was in this preseason, that's a win for the Lions right now. I know it's hard to kind of spin Ragnow being injured as a win, but we might have discovered something for the future in terms of a rotational piece, someone who might be able to fit in a guard or centre going forward if he continues to play the way he is for us.
Well, as I said during the review podcast the other day, we still managed to rush for over 100 yards the other day without our top centre, without our top left tackle, you know, with a rotational piece in at right tackle as well. You know, the job that Hank Fraley's doing with these O-line guys, there's nothing short of remarkable. But, you know, fair play to Evan Brown coming in, because he's replacing one of the best centres in the league. It's not an easy position. It's not an easy set of shoes to fill. And he did give away a sack in the game, but apart from that, he looked pretty steady. So, you know, we're going to need him to be good this year. If we do want to win a game, that offensive line's going to be the key to it, you know, giving us enough to go forward offensively. So, yeah, I hope he keeps it up. But, you know, it was a decent start for him. We'll see how he does in the next one now that he's got the job permanently.
Other move is that Quintez Cephas is placed on IR. It's expected that he might miss between 6 and 8 weeks, which means that he might come back for the final 4 to 6 games of the year. It's a bit gutting. Quintez Cephas is third in the NFL on run after catch above expected, which is an incredible stat for someone not vaunted for their speed. So that tells you how well he's been playing. In a corresponding move, Javon McKinley has been re-signed to the practice squad for the umpteenth time this season. We're only 5 weeks in, boys. It's not the fucking hokey cokey.
Get Hawkins tonight on IR. Win list for Willis. The tank starts here. Let's fucking go.
Be bleak for Malik. Yeah. Tight end Jarrett Pinkney was released from the practice squad in the move to bring Javon McKinley back in. Sad for Cephas, boys. I mean, someone who's come in, day two guy? Was he fourth or fifth rounder? I can't remember. I think he was fourth in 2020, if memory serves.
Round five.
Yeah, so Cephas early day three guy. Not expected to do much. We had high hopes, but, you know, from a round five guy, if you can get a couple of seasons of production, that's great. And he's had a fantastic start to the season, considering where this wide receiver corps at.
I thought out of the weekend's game, Cephas and Seifert were the two big positives.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I mean, our kicking problem seems to be completely sorted. You know, and
I thought you said Cephas twice. I was just like, what?
Cephas and Cephas, so good they named
it. It's the strong Scottish accent. I know it fools you.
But no, it's been good to see him come through. We said any receiver that puts himself forward for a long-term future here this year is a bonus, because we didn't know if we were going to get anyone or not. But Cephas has come forward, and you know he's really taken the bull by the horns. He's, you know, he's picked up the slack from everyone else not been there. He's done really well. You saw under Stafford that he's a threat in the deep game, and you've seen with, you know, the one good thing with Goff is in the short and intermediate game, you can see he's good as well. So he's a threat on all three levels to a degree, which is going to be a hugely great thing going forward, that sort of versatility.
He looks like a wide receiver one. I mean, for a Lions wide receiver one, but he looks like our wide receiver one.
He does. And, you know, he's going to be a good asset for us going forward. You know, that's one less receiver we've got to go out and find now. You know, we've landed on a fifth round draft pick who looks like he's going to do the business for us. So it was a great pick. And, you know, it's one less receiver for us to have to go and find next year. And St. Brown looks like he's growing into games. So it looks like our slot receiver may also be on the verge of getting nailed in. So that's two parts of the receiving core we can say are in good hands now. We just need to go out and find a true one.
I think it's great that Cephas, you know, is such a good wide receiver with a name that sounds like he should really be in a chess club.
Yeah, yeah, I'm right with you, man. There's something that coincidentally, having not talked to you about it before, I have also had that same thought. That's really, really bizarre. Okay, fair enough. One Pride 40 has brought up a good question. It was asked by Anthony on our Twitter account this week. But Tracy Walker is out of contract at the end of this season. We're clearly a team not doing much this year. Is he going to want to stay? Are we going to want to keep him? Do we want to move him before the trade deadline? Do we have the ability to keep him here if we want to? You know, these are all kind of factors in this decision. What do you guys think?
Pay the man. Yeah. Pay the man. Pay him now. I mean, you know... We need talented young players, and we can't just keep ditching talent on the hope of a draft pick paying off. He's not going to be the most expensive player to pay. He's not going to cost us the earth. He's clearly talented, but also he's clearly got room for development because he's getting better and better with each game. His play is getting better. He's missing less tackles. He's sharp. He's now starting to look like, you know, he can genuinely make a play. I just think he's been really unlucky. I just think it's just like he's had like kind of breakout games without making that much of an impact, if that makes sense. Like, his stats don't really show how close he's been to like making some plays. So I think he's one for the future, because unlike his opposite number, Will Harris, he has shown that the benefit of the coaching he's getting from Aaron Glenn is paying off. He's getting better.
I know it seems like we've done a complete U-turn on him this year, because obviously at the end of last, things were looking grim for him, and we said he needed to do better this year, and he's had a consistently good start so far. He's back at free safety where he belongs, quite frankly. He just looks so much better there. He's playing at a high level, and I think for me, because I did ask the question of whether, you know, I think we need to do it before the trade deadline, because I don't think you can run the risk of him playing well this year and deciding he doesn't want to be a part of this moving forward at the end of the season. You know, it makes sense for us to keep a talented young guy, but just from an economics point of view, if we sign him now, it's going to be on a much better deal for the team than it will be at the end of the season. If he's the second ranked safety in the NFL at the minute. If he plays a full season and ends up as the second ranked safety in all aspects and whatnot, then he's going to want a fortune, a lot more than we'll get him for now. So I think it makes sense for us to keep him now at a better value contract. But it shows out a statement of intent that the players who are improving deserve their deals here, because we said he needed to play better to justify a new deal, and he's played better. So let's give him that new deal to justify the play he's come up with.
I think as well, this is like a big test for the kind of culture that we're building. Because if he really is buying into Aaron Glenn and Aubrey Pleasant, you know, if that really is paying off and that the locker room's united and all the players are behind the coaches, then he'll sign the deal. If we make him a decent offer, he will sign the deal. If Tracy Walker is like angling for a trade, then that kind of tells us that maybe, you know, everything isn't as rosy in the locker room as we're led to believe. But it really feels like the players are getting behind the coaches. And I think, just going back to the point you made, Matt, about him getting better, I think one of the things on this podcast that we've been really consistent about is not having agendas about players. And if we think a player sucks and he gets better and proves it on the field, we absolutely get behind them. And we weren't very big on Tracy Walker a few games ago, but we had no reason to. Whereas he's just consistently shown on the field in a Lions jersey, he's getting better, he's improving, and his ceiling looks to be going up and up.
Yeah, on that point, so by game two, he hadn't posted a PFF grade above 66. I remember talking after the Green Bay game to all of you guys, saying, well, if he carries on like this, we're dropping him. That was only 3 weeks ago, but we were talking about cutting him loose. And then he's posted grades of 82.5, 72.6, and 88.1. I mean, he has responded to the criticism in a dramatic fashion. There was a question in the chat, and I think it's probably sarcastic from Debt Fan Man, because he's from Luke G's chat. He knows exactly how much we love PFF and how much they don't. But Tracy Walker, week 5, I'm going to put a minimum snap count of 20 on just to get rid of any stragglers. Tracy Walker was number 3 in PFF's rankings, and it wasn't particularly close. If you take 20 plus snaps, he was 14 points higher than the next guy after him in fourth, if he's in third. So, you know, he's had a dramatic turnaround, a really good game last week. So the question is, so the projected franchise tag for safeties in 2022 per over the cap is $13.5 million. If he refuses a deal, there is no one else looking through our team right now who I would even consider for a tag. There's no one close. Walker is the only one. Would you even consider tagging him if he did not want to resign?
Nah.
No, not at that price.
No, too high. This is a player still in development. I know it's, you know, he's not a rookie. He, you know, he's played multiple seasons, but this is a player still developing. So I wouldn't franchise tag him.
I think we all said the other day what we'd do between 6 and 8, maybe something like that. I mean, if you were to give him like 3 years, 24, 25 million, something like that, maybe not the worst deal in the world. You spread it out, you know, because by the time he develops and if you backload the deal, he'll be worth what you're paying him by then. But 13.5 is very rich, because the trouble is when you've got him on that, when you try and give him a contract next year, if he carries on playing well, you can't really dip far below that. It's a lot to pay a safety.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, even if it was something like 3 years, 39 million, but with half of that in the final year, then, you know, you can cut him after 2 if he hasn't lived up to the deal with not very much dead cap. And otherwise, in that final year, you just try and re-sign him instead of keeping him on that deal. But it at least gives you a chance to keep him around for a little while. I don't know, something like that where the benefit kind of goes both ways if he plays well.
I'm not sure that would entice him to sign.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, in 3 or 4 years' time, if what I've heard to believe, the salary cap's going to be up near 250 million by then. It's going to go up
by
a
when?
Lot. In about 3 or 4 years, I think they said it's going to be up to about 250 million, which is about 60 more than where it's at now. So maybe take a bit more of a risk with a deal like that. But I think for now, I'd be wanting the 6 to 8 million range,
so,
if possible.
Debt Fan Man replies to the question by saying $13 million for Walker on the tag seems cheap compared to what Quinn just paid Justin Coleman on his contract in Detroit. And when you consider the value of the free safety position versus the nickelback position, he's got a point, hasn't he?
It's not the best example of Justin Coleman.
Or Bob Quinn giving out a contract. But I do get his point. You know, in recent history, we have paid guys that much. But, you know, Justin Coleman ended up costing us a ton of money. And the thing is, it's consistency. At this minute in time, we're paying him based on what he's done this year, really. And I don't know. The thing is, I want him here regardless, because as Steve said, for culture, he's just a culture guy. He's a great guy. He's a hard worker. You can see that he wants to be a team leader in there. You can see the progression on the pitch now that he's got competent coaches here at last. So, you know, I just hope they find a way to get a deal done. At the end of the day, you know, money's money, you know, but to us as fans, he's the type of player we want to see here.
Definitely. I mean, there's not very many people that we have averaging a PFF grade of 80 or above in the last 3 weeks. Just as a very fundamental level.
If you compare him to, say, Oruwariye and how he's played, you know, he's someone that's shown flashes but hasn't shown consistent improvement and has actually got burned and had some bad games. So if you look at, you know, the difference between the two, Walker is someone that you'd be thinking, you know, this is a guy we want here in 3-4 years as the kind of rebuild progresses. But Oruwariye, based on his performances, you kind of think, well, I'm still not sure on this guy.
Never mind not sure on this guy. If Okuda was fit, if Melifonwu was fit, I think Amani would be in trouble for his roster spot right now.
Melifonwu's going to take his job.
Yeah, he will.
Melifonwu will have his job in 18 months. You hope with Aaron Glenn here, because, I mean, the corners all have the same problem, as there's no senior guy in there to provide that leadership value. They are all young rookies trying to prove themselves, and you can see with all of them, in spurts, Amani's got 2 picks in successive weeks. You know, he's been in the right place at the right time. The young UDFA guys have had their spurts there, so they've all got the same issue. You know, how does Amani play in a more experienced secondary without all the pressure being on him as cornerback one? Maybe do you see what you want to out of him then as a depth guy? But again, he's just in a rough position at the minute.
I think the problem is that what we saw last week was a team intentionally target Armani instead of our rookie UDFA on the other side. It's a point that Jeff Risden made on the Detroit Lions podcast a couple of days ago. But I'm shamelessly stealing it because it's just fundamentally true. We had a rookie UDFA at cornerback 2, and they could have targeted him, but they chose to target Amani.
Well, AJ got targeted 7 times and gave up 7 catches. I think Amani only gave up 3, but it was for more than AJ.
There's a couple of big players, yeah.
But I mean, he also got beaten more than the number of times he got targeted as well. Like, just because he didn't get the ball thrown his way doesn't mean he was getting beaten rep after rep.
No, and AJ was getting in the backfield, which Amano doesn't seem to do much.
No.
But
I mean, obviously, it's a different position.
But I think, you know, Amani's problem is he's the experienced guy in there, so he's held to a more of a standard than the UDFAs. The UDFAs, we expect to get burned and beaten every now and then, but Amani's in the troubled position as he has to perform.
I mean,
I'm not entirely, I don't want to write him off yet. I don't. But, you know, there's not going to be any corner help coming until next year now. And, you know, his contract's soon coming up. What is he in his third year now? So he's only got one more year left, and we have to decide whether to pay or leave. So,
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't even really be giving him a shot next year. He's going to have this season to justify him having a shot next year. And if he plays badly this season, Okuda, Melifonwu, Jacobs in the mix next season with another year under their belts, at least in Jacobs' spot, but Okuda's already ahead of him, right? And he's going to be. And then Melifonwu is iffy. We'll see what happens with that. And then we might even draft someone, you know, third round or something like that. We could draft another corner. We could. And that really puts him on the roster bubble.
I don't think Okuda's as high as you rate him at the minute on the depth. Comes back next year, he's missed the majority of his first 2 years. I don't think he's going to be that high up on the depth chart. And I still think there's a question of whether they're going to move him to safety. I think that's going to be a question that's going to get asked more and more, especially with the type of injuries he's had and the speed maybe not quite there.
It's a good point. And you know, that, I mean, you know, we won't really know until we kind of get an idea what our draft board is.
Yeah.
Because if we're going for, say, is it Stingley?
It is Stingley, but yeah.
Then that kind of tells you what they're planning on doing with Okuda.
Yeah, I very much doubt that we'd go in that direction, but it could happen. We'll see. Talking about cornerback help, the Lions have signed cornerback Mark Gilbert from the Steelers practice squad. He's a cousin of Darrell Revis. He was a 2021 UDFA, 7.19 on the RAS scale. He posted elite 10 splits and broad jumps. Not the most agile guy in the shuttle and the three cone, but a good overall speed, quite tall at 6'1" for a corner. Little slight, though. He was 186 pounds when he got given his RAS score. He played, to my knowledge, I'm recalling from other podcasts, he played 1.5 years in college and then spent 2 years out with a hip injury. So he hasn't played a lot of football. But he's someone who is very athletic. So, you know, he's going to fit right in with what this team wants to do. It might be a couple of weeks for him to come up to speed. But, you know, this is potentially quite exciting, especially maybe at the back end of this year. It's providing depth for later, right?
No. I think this is where Raz is, you know, it favours some players, but I don't think we're going to see him. I wouldn't play him. I don't think there's any reason to drop the corners we've got now. Just keep giving game time to Jacobs, Price and to Parker. You know, because they're going to be the guys who are going to be here in the future. But this guy has spent a long time out injured. He's not really played in the NFL per se. You know, I don't really care about his RAS score. I care about how he plays. You know, I care about his performances on the pitch, and there aren't any to go off. So I'm not playing him just because of a RAS. I'm certainly not playing him over the guys who are here.
Okay,
they've earned their chance there, but
I don't think mean we're right now. I mean, like, maybe like week 16 or something. The guy's a rookie. Like, he's not like he's in a different spot to Jacobs particularly, apart from Jacobs has been here for the last 8 weeks.
There's only one thing exciting about our secondary, and that's that we've only got 12 more games to go.
Hey!
I don't know. I don't expect to see him. I really don't. And I'm fed up with players with injury histories. You know, we've got enough injuries at the minute as it goes. People who can stay healthy.
I guess that's the thing, though. When we're up against the cap, and after this signing, I think we are $3 million now away from being at the cap ceiling, so we are getting ever, ever closer. At that point, you can either take someone out of the bargain basement, a veteran who is not particularly good, is proven he's not particularly good, but maybe he's injury-free, Or you can take someone who potentially has an injury history, but his ceiling's much higher. And I guess they're just gambling on the upside, right?
I don't know what his ceiling is, though. But to be honest, I don't know when he was drafted, what his ceiling is, how good he is. There's no tape to say what he's capable of.
Yeah, the last tape he has is from 3 years ago. So.
Exactly. You know, a player hasn't played for 3 years. There's a reason behind that. I know he's had injuries there, but he's not played since he came back. He's been bouncing around other teams as practice squads. But not really. No. Stick with our guys.
You know, like, take Tracy Walker and his recent kind of resurgence aside, our secondary is an absolute talent for his own. And if you're a player with an injury history coming off someone else's practice squad, like, here's your chance, guys. Here's your chance to make it in the NFL, because, you know, there is absolutely an opportunity to make an impact on a bunch that's really, really struggling. And I'm not saying there's no potential there, but in terms of making plays and, you know, we've saw with the prevent defense in the Vikings game, you know, that's where you want someone to just appear out of the backfield and make a pick.
I mean, okay, fair, but the guy who made the mistake on the prevent defense play was Dean Marlowe. It wasn't a rookie. So, it sucks, but sometimes players just make mistakes in key moments, whether they're rookies or not. So, anyway, let's move on. Final bit of news, Pride of Detroit launched their October poll for head coach and approval ratings. MCDC has a 96% approval rating, being the first Lions coach to start 0-5 in a long, long time. Why? Why do Lions fans love Dan Campbell?
Because he's authentic. I don't really want to give Gruden airtime this week. But, you know, I think one of the things that has consistently been said by some of the ex-players about Gruden is the lack of authenticity in terms of, you know, having a persona in the locker room and having a persona, you know, as an analyst. And the fact that, you know, it's clear from what's come out in the last couple of weeks that those personas just do not marry up, and there's a major, lack of trust. And I think the thing with Dan Campbell is, you know, what you see is what you get. And Detroit people, that's what they like. They like someone that is straight up honest, is going to look them in the eye, and is not going to give them any coach speak or any spin. If he's upset, he's going to look upset. If he's pissed off, he's going to say he's pissed off. If he's happy with a player, he's going to call them out. And, you know, when you think about the response of some of the Detroit media, you know, like the radio station who superimposed a baby's crying voice over Dan Campbell's press conference footage, that just shows how cynical some of the coverage that he's got is. And if you amplify that outside of Detroit into the nationwide media, where all they're looking for is, you know, a kind of quick cliche hit anyway, that's why Campbell is kind of seen as this meme outside of the kind of Lions area, whereas we can see what the guy is bringing. He's bringing authenticity, he's bringing, you know, a team spirit, and he's building something, and that's why we like him.
Not only that though, but, you know, we are upset in some cases, angry that we've not won games 5 games into his tenure with this team, with, you know, the absolute wasteland that Bob Quinn left behind, with all the injuries that we've had, with the sheer lack of talent we've got in some areas of the pitch. We shouldn't be like competing in some of these games. We shouldn't be competing with teams like the Ravens, and we're upset that we've lost these games. That is the change that's the change he's brought about to this team. This team is playing better than the sum of its parts. His coordinators are doing really good jobs in, you know, especially Aaron Glenn's case with what he's got to work with. Just the change has just been immense, and, you know, we're in all these games. We shouldn't be, really, when you look at the team we've got. That's why we believe in Dan Campbell, because what's going to happen this time in 12 months when we've got a whole shed load of cap, about 60 million in cap, and a huge, you know, pool of draft resources to pick from. Brad Holmes smashed this draft out the park. So what's he going to do with even more picks? You know, that's what we're excited about. That's why we're looking forward to the future. And those of us who have keen analytic eyes can see that. And you can just see the cultures change and the players care for one another. Ragnow has put himself out this season because he wants, you know, he's had this surgery now. He didn't have to go for it, but he's seen what this team's about. He wants to be healthy and ready to go next year. Other players, you know, wouldn't do that sort of thing. They'd try and play through the pain and salvage it now, but he can see what's happening. And that's going to bode as well going forward. So I mean, there's no reason we should be questioning him after five games. But anyone who with an analytical eye can see how good he's doing.
So on Ragnow, apparently he wanted to play on. And this is one of the reasons why I love this coaching staff, is they are not thinking about tomorrow. They're thinking about a year from now, 2 years from now. If you build a team always with the idea that in 3 years' time you will be the best team that you can be, you're going to have a great team consistently. You may not get that Super Bowl title, but you will consistently be in the playoff hunt or in the playoffs every single year if you are making moves to make sure that in 3 years' time you're as competitive as you can be. Not to a complete fault. I don't mean they're cutting every like marginal guy they can to save cap. I don't mean that sort of thing. But just, you look at people who've made unsustainable moves. People say, oh, the cap is a social construct. I've heard that a lot. But at the end of the day, something happens like New Orleans this season. And while they're remaining somewhat competitive, it's a big fall from where they've been. It's a reset year for them. Same for the Patriots. They had to take the L last year. If you always have the idea that you are looking the best interest of your players, your staff, your team, not just today and tomorrow, but for the future, the needs of your franchise are going to be met always. And I love that they said to Ragnow, no, we can't afford to have you having a chronic recurring injury for the next 4 years just to play you in a year that's already lost. It's something that Bob Quinn would not have done.
This is a situational thing, and I completely think that Campbell would do exactly the same thing in any situation. But the big advantage that Campbell's got over Matt Nagy or Mike Zimmer is he's not on the hot seat this year. You know, if the Bears or the Vikings had a young talent, say like Justin Jefferson or Justin Fields, that was carrying that niggling injuries and was struggling with injury, they would have to, their whole focus would be about getting them on the field on a Sunday, because they know fine well that their job is on the line and the performance of the team is on the line. Campbell has got the luxury that he doesn't need that. He doesn't need to be trying to, you know, get Ragnar through his like medical clearance and get him on the pitch, because, you know, at the end of the day, Campbell has got this season as grace before the pressure heats up, and it will definitely heat up, even though we are in a rebuild and it's not a 12-month rebuild, it'll be 3 years, but it will heat up next year. But this season he's got a pass and he can make these decisions, and that's a massive advantage that we've got over like people like the Bears and the Vikings.
Yeah, I completely agree. The practices are out, so we can highlight the injury report in just a moment. There's a couple of questions I wanted to ask that was in here. Oh, Ashley just said, Gilbert played in preseason, got 5 tackles and 2 PBUs for Pittsburgh, so there's a little bit of tape that we can look at recently, I guess. But how far does preseason go, really, I guess, is the question, especially when you have a look at someone like Jamar Chase that we're going to be facing. You have one of the worst preseasons that a first rounder has ever had in a long time, and yet leads the league in touchdown receptions. So, you know, it only goes so far. There was one question I really wanted to ask, and I can't see it. Oh, one Prime Falls, he said, as a depth player or a starter, what will happen with Okuda? And do you think he will move to safety, or do you just want him to move to safety?
It depends, really. I think it depends on the production of the cornerbacks this year. If Parker or Jacobs or Price established themselves in there, you know, I'd like them to have a starting slot. If he has shown that he can play there, I'd like to have some senior help in there. So if you know, if the corners ball out, then by all means, send him there. You know, just have as many great players in your team as you can. And I think, you know, it might help him, that transition will. If you've got Walker in there on a new deal, if you've got Okuda in there doing what he does best, if you draft the safety, maybe Hamilton, I mean, geez, those three, the safety room would be massively upgraded to what it is now. And it would be young as well. It would be a really young but still experienced secondary. Tracy Walker would be the natural leader in there for two young guys who need guidance. So it all depends on how the players do this year for me. If enough of the corners ball out and it's going to be a problem next year to get him back in, then move him. If not, then maybe try him again and see what happens.
Yeah, my answer would be, I don't care. What I want is I do not want to add Okuda to the list of picks that we've wasted. I don't want him up there with Jared Davis and Tyus Tebow and all these kind of like, you know, picks from the first and second round that have just disappeared into, you know, the distance, and we've just wasted them. So let's get what we can out of Okuda. If he can come back and the Achilles is strong and he's rehabbed and he's back to his sharpness, let's keep him at corner. If it's taken an edge off his game and he's got to change, let's put him at safety. But let's not waste, you know, he's undoubtedly a very talented guy. All of the draft analysts were pretty much universally that he should be the second, third, fourth pick. You know, this isn't someone we've taken a flyer on. This should have been an absolute cast iron pick. So we know he's got something, and let's not waste it.
Yeah, there's revisionist history going on with Okuda. There was no other pick we were making. There wasn't one. Isaiah Simmons was the darling of the Twitterverse for the Lions. But there was absolutely no way we were taking an off-ball linebacker with pick number three. And the draft analysts agreed with that. The only one we might have taken was the DT that went to Carolina, was it?
Brown. New York. Andrew Thomas, weren't it?
No, that's OT. DT. What did he say, Steve? Was it?
Brown? Someone Brown?
Yeah, that's the one. Can't remember his name quite, but someone will let me know in the chat in a minute, I'm sure. But
one of our eagle-eyed fans will spot that.
There's always one other guy you could take, though. It's like when you talk about TJ, everyone goes, oh, but we should have taken Brian Burns, yada, yada. There's always going to be that every year.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a pick that pleases everybody.
It's Derek Brown, isn't it, before someone gives it in the chat. Derek Brown was the guy. And he's done well. Oh, yeah. But, you know, Okuda was the unanimous pick. And I still think he's going to be really good. What I saw from him in the preseason and one game in the NFL was enough for me to say, you know what? The first year was a fluke. He was injured. And that wasn't reflective of his level of play. And then he had the burst in speed. He gave up one really big play on coverage that was 99% perfect. And just that 1% was enough. And that's all the experience he had. If you have a look at what Tracy Walker did that week and the following week, you'd have said he was poor as well. But he hasn't had enough time. And you can't label him a bust until he's actually had an opportunity to succeed, and he hasn't done yet. So I'm with Steve. It's about whether he's got that explosion in his foot. You know, if he has, corners, fine. If he hasn't, he's got to go to safety because he's got to be on the field. But anyway, let's move on to Bengals at the Lions on Sunday. Betting line per Betfair earlier this morning. Bengals 2-1 on the Lions 8-5 in UK style odds. What does that mean? That means that the Bengals are -300. -300. The Lions are +250. If I can get that right. Converting is really difficult.
We had a mathematician in the group that could help us with these calculations.
Who's that guy? Where's he gone? three and a half point spread in favor of the Bengals. The over under is 47.5. And in
smash
terms
that.
Yeah.
Smash that. Yeah. We're going over.
Yeah, I would also smack. Well, okay, I won't spoil anything, but anyway. The Bengals have a couple of COVID issues. Jackson Carman, the rookie offensive lineman, and running back Samji Perine are on COVID reserve. I believe they are both eligible to return the day of the game. So we'll see if they suit up or not. Cornerback Trey Waynes, though, has been placed on IR as of Tuesday, so he will not be suiting up. Looking at who's practiced so far this week, The Bengals on Wednesday had two did not practices. That's center Trey Hopkins and cornerback Darius Phillips. Five limited: Joe Mixon, Dante Smith, Quinton Spain, Mike Thomas, and Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is full practice, but obviously he's unable to speak right now. He's actually not doing media interviews because they are saving his voice. That's how much he was affected by last week. Joe Mixon, obviously an issue for them. The Lions have had their Thursday report out, and it's not good news for Jamal Williams. He was limited yesterday, but did not practice today with a hip and illness. So he's dealing with a couple of issues. Corey Ballantyne hasn't practiced for the second straight day. But Flowers, Hockenson, Oruwariye, Jonah Jackson, and DeAndre Swift are all limited today. That's the first time Flowers, Hockenson, and Oruwariye have practiced this week, so they're trending towards playing. But Jamal looks like he could well be out, unless it's the illness predominantly which is keeping him out of today, but the hip that made him limited yesterday. It could be that for the first time this season, we see Jermar Jefferson as running back too.
Well, we can but hope so. He can put in a good performance and absolutely justify my glowing praises of him every week. But Jamal and Swift have been on the injury report pretty much every day this season so far. I think it's just the illness that's affected him today. I wouldn't be writing him off anywhere near yet. If they've just had a down day till he gets rid of this, I'd still expect him to play. But obviously, I do hope we play Jefferson, because Jefferson is an uber-talented running back who just needs the opportunity to prove it. And all his coaches are saying how good his attitude is, how good his play is coming on. He's got everything you need. He's a really good run blocker. He gives you a lot in the game. He's also a dual-threat guy when he wants to be. You saw in preseason, he balled out. So... You know, I'm looking forward to seeing if he comes in. I just want him to show what he can do to the world, because, you know, not everyone's high on him at the minute. People don't like seventh round running backs, as one of the beat writers shouted at me for the other week. I think it was Jay Riz, maybe.
Yeah, it was Jay Riz. Let's move on to talk about the Bengals, and let's start with their recent results. They have started 3-2 this season. Per PFR, their expected win-loss is 2.9 to 2.1, so they're pretty much exactly where they should be so far this season. They've had a very close run of games, so only one game so far has not been a three-point difference. Four games have all been three-point games, and one was a blowout. They beat Minnesota in Cincinnati 27-24 in the first week, lost to Chicago 17-20 in Chicago. They then blew out Pittsburgh 24-10 in Pittsburgh, then beat Jacksonville at home 24-10 before recently losing in one of the worst kicking displays I've seen in some time, 25-22. It doesn't seem to matter who they're playing. They are convinced it's going to be a close game, and maybe that reflects the 3.5-point spread that we've got in this game, boys. But if we have a look at their offense and have a look at how our defense can maybe combat that, their offense has scored 114 points so far this season. That's 18th in the league. Passing offense has been actually not as good as you might expect, given their array of weapons and Joe Burrow available. 1,174 passing yards is 24th in the NFL. 11 passing touchdowns is 8th. And 6 interceptions is 20. Their 7.4 net yards per attempt is 7th. So when they have passed the ball and it's been caught, it's gone for quite a long way. They're risking interceptions, but they like scoring via passing touchdown rather than rushing the ball. Despite the fact they've got Joe Mixon, despite the fact he's looked good this year, they only have 495 yards on the ground. That's 22nd in the NFL. 3 running touchdowns is 21st, and 3.9 yards per attempt is 23rd. They're not the best on third down, converting only 37% of their attempts, which is 23rd. But when they do get into fourth down, which is not very often, they are 4 of 6, which is 2/3 completion. That's 5th in the NFL. In the red zone, they have only been in the red zone 10 times in 5 weeks. That reflects the fact that a lot of their touchdowns have been long range via Jamar Chase. But 10 times they've been in the red zone, 8 scores is 3rd in the NFL. Their offensive weapons, Joe Burrow, he has those passing stats I just said. He's completing 72% of his passes, 106 passer rating, 55 QBR. He's had 14 sacks against him, which is a sack every 8.8% of his dropbacks and an 85 PFF rating. They've got a trio of wide receivers. The two I'm going to highlight, Ja'Marr Chase, he's obviously been a revelation there so far, catching 65% of his passes, 23 on 35 attempts, 456 yards and 5 touchdowns, leads the NFL, 19 yards per touch, beg your pardon, 80 PFF grade. Tyler Boyd's also had a good one. Same number of passes gone his way, but he's caught a few more, 77%, 283 yards and a touchdown, 10 yards a catch, 76 PFF grade, and Joe Mixon on the ground, 93 attempts, 386 yards, 4.2 yards per attempt, and an 80 PFF grade. This team knows how to work around its O-line, which has not been as bad as last year, but is still not good. They're able to throw the ball deep, and they've had enough rushing success to make it work.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals are one of those teams that have previously been like pretty low on my radar. And let's face it, they've been pretty shitty as a franchise for quite some time now. And this is the best Bengals team I've seen in recent history. I do believe I was laughed at when I suggested that they would challenge for the AFC North a couple of pods ago. But from what I've seen, they're a hair's breadth away from being, 4-1. And the thing I like about them, because normally Bengals teams are kind of unwatchable, but they're really good to watch. I like Burrow as a QB. I was not enamored with what I saw at the start last year before he got injured. But he seems to me, first of all, he's brave as anything. I mean, considering the injuries had, the O-line is much better and they are protecting him, but he's still taken some hits. And he's also run the ball. Like, he's pretty fearless at charging forward with the ball to try and get on third and long. He's done it a couple of times and I've just kind of like winced. But he's a brave kid. He's got a great arm. Like many sort of developmental QBs, he is prone to the odd blunder. He threw probably the worst interception I've seen that hasn't been thrown by Kirk Cousins or Blake Bortles last week. It was just an absolute seeing ghosts interception into like nowhere. But he's also got some weapons. Chase has looked genuinely like a wide receiver one. He's actually, I guess he's exploded quicker than Jefferson did. Jefferson took half a season to explode at the Vikings. Chase has looked good from day one. I think one of the reasons is they've got such a good core because Tyler Boyd is a threat. And you're not mentioning T. Higgins. T. Higgins, has struggled with injury, but, he's looked great in flashes. And the tight end, is it Azuma?
Azuma.
Yeah, he looks decent. So I think with that package, the Bengals and Joe Mixon, I wouldn't say he's like a top 10 wide receiver, but he's probably around about the 15 to 20 mark, and he's decent. And I think the reason why they're only ranked around low 20s is because they can throw the ball so well, so they're not needed to rely on the run game. But at the same time, situationally, Joe Mixon can break out with a 6 yards here, 8 yards there. They look a really well-balanced team. So for me, they're definitely someone that we should be worried about.
What do you think, Ant, on this Bengals offense?
I mean, all around it's good. I mean, Burrow is a really good quarterback. Obviously, he gets beaten up a lot, but given the situation he's found himself in there, he's still done really well. You know, they've got a lead running back in Joe Mixon, who's really good. They've invested well in their receivers. It's a young receiver core with T. Higgins, Chase. You know, they've just recruited well for it. I think their record's more probably to do with how their defense has been doing as well. You know, that was atrocious last year, but they invested very wisely this offseason. But, you know, it has to be feared. And the one thing we don't want at the minute is a set of young, explosive receivers who are going to get into our secondary and start trying to light it up with a quarterback who's capable of throwing a really good pass there. So, you know, that's obviously concerning from that point of view. But, I mean, that offensive line's really bad, though. It's really, really, really bad. Burrow's already taken 16 hits this year. It's only 5 games in. You know, if he goes on at, if he keeps going on at the rate he's going, he's going to be up at like nearly 60, 65 hits for the season. You can't be taking that many hits from NFL caliber defenders and staying healthy, as has already been shown. You know, he had a serious injury to end his season last year. He's already been to hospital this year. You know, they're going to get him killed in the end. I think I was looking through their PFF grades the other day. I don't use it anywhere near as religiously as you for matters on this, but their wide receivers are grading out as better blockers than the guards. I mean, you know, over a bigger period of time, and you're thinking that's just how bad it is. I mean, Carmen been on COVID reserve is terrible because he's an absolutely atrocious lineman. I think he's given up 8 or 9 pressures this season already. And, you know, because he was Trevor Lawrence's left tackle at Clemson. And, you know, you'd think a guy of that caliber really good, but there's a reason he's transitioned to guard, because he can't make the, he can't hack it at tackle, and he's not really done well at guard either. Yes, he may be settling into a new position, but, you know, if you're looking at that Bengals offense, that O-line is just a massive, massive target. And who have two of our best players been recently? Our two edge rushers, you know, Trey Flowers and Charles Harris. So, you know, it's bad to come up against a young wide receiver core like that that can hurt us a lot, but we're coming up against an offensive line which can't block. And given that our interior defensive line's doing a lot better recently, guys like McNeil are starting to come through. Brockers is playing really well. You know, I fancy the matchup there. I really do. And if we can lay some hits down on Burrow while he's not well, then, you know, their backup's Brandon Allen. And if you bring Brandon Allen in, then you can forget about that receiving core being a problem because he's useless.
So the thing for me about their offensive line is it's part very good and it's part very bad. And I don't want to
sounds familiar.
I don't want to bleat on too much about PFF, but they have several truisms that I hold to, I subscribe to. It's not about grades, it's about how you think about the game. And the first they talk about is basically your defense is as bad as your weakest defender. And I kind of subscribe to that. But more relatable to this one, that the second rule is that the offensive line is all about trying to have an average line across the entire line, because if you have a weak link there, it will get exploited. Any weak link you have on the offensive line makes the whole line much worse. So, Jonah Williams, one of the better left tackles so far this season. Riley Reiff, a good right tackle so far this season. Quinton Spain, one of the better guards this season. But Jackson Carman, I think the worst rated guard so far this year, guard tackle. And Trey Hopkins, one of the worst centers in the league. So, I'm not worrying about our edge rushes because I think they'll give their tackles problems, but that's not who I'm banking on. This is a breakout game in the making for Aleem McNeil. If we are to have success in this game, he must wreck that interior. If he does, we've got a massive chance. But against that weak duo in the interior, they've got to come up big. And if Carmen can't play, he's going to be replaced by Xavier Suafilo, I think, who rated just as bad, pretty much. So it's Aleem McNeil and it's John Pennacini and it's Michael Brockers and whoever kind of fills in that interior sometimes for the odd snap here or there, especially on third and longs. That's who I'm looking at to wreck this game, because we've got to protect our secondary against this wide receiver corps, because I am scared about what might happen if Burrow gets time in the pocket. Burrow gets time in the pocket, we're buggered.
Oh, that's the key. That's the key this week. You've got to ruffle him up early. You know, you've just got to imprint yourself on this game. And he's a quarterback who's hurting. You know, he's not going to be fully fit going into this weekend, even if he is training fully. You know, he's going to have a throat that's not very good. And one hit could, you know, shake him up again. Like I say, their backup, it's a big drop in skill when you go to Brandon Allen from Joe Burrow. So that has to be the plan this weekend. And I agree with you. It's it's there for the interior defensive line, whether it's McNeil in the three or it's Levi in the four, you know, Brockers in there. I'd expect them to get a lot of success in there. Those guards and centers, like you say, are vulnerable, and we're going to be able to do a lot with that. And hopefully they're not going to be able to install the run game on us for similar reasons, just because there is bad run blocking. So, you know, that's the key, getting up Burrow and just stopping him using Chase, Higgins, etc. But, you know, I think one of the things that's underrated, Thielen didn't get much of a look in last week. I know Jefferson did well on us, but, you know, I do trust these guys in the secondary. If they're allowed to get into a bit closer coverage, as I said, they should have done the other week, which they did a bit, trust them a bit more. I think they are capable of dealing with some of these guys. You know, Parker, Jacobs, they've shown themselves worthy of, you know, matching up against some of these guys. So I think if you can just put enough pressure on, they will be able to do the job.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, at this point, you've got to trust them a bit because you don't want to sacrifice the entire team on the altar of protecting the secondary. It's not worth it. In this freebie year that we have, let's really test these guys and see what they're made of. I completely agree with that. Dan had a question on Twitch. He said, kind of, I think in response to what you were saying about Mixon, he said, sorry, I kind of stepped away for a moment. Is Mixon a bit like Swift then? I missed what you were saying. Do you think that Mixon and Swift is a fair comp? Because I don't think they're too dissimilar, actually, when you think about it, in terms of the fundamentals of how they play the game.
To be honest, I won't really be able to. I don't really watch the Bengals that much, just because a lot of the games, not for a bad thing, but, you know, there's teams I watch like the Cardinals and that I like to watch because I enjoy them, but the Bengals, I've not watched too much of them. I think Mixon's a really good running back. I just think he's not, you know, he's not in the best position there to succeed because the offensive line has been and is not great, but he's shown what he can do. So you have to be worried about him. I mean, I'm not discounting him for this game at all. You know, he's dangerous. Perrine's done well in relief of him. I know he's on the COVID list as well, but if he plays, you can't discount them. But I would fancy our interior defensive line against their offensive line in this one any day of the week. So I would like to think that we'd be able to deal with it or deal with it, you know, a bit better than we have done with the run recently.
I think there are similarities, but I think Swift's a better receiving back.
So
yeah, I'd agree with that.
So in terms of PFF grades, and I know they're not the Holy Grail, please don't flame me, but he has had, this is his fifth season, he has only had one season below a PFF grade of 72. Which is pretty good. This is his best season so far in terms of the start that he's had. Luke G's just had a comment that Mixon is better than Swift at running, catching, and blocking.
He's definitely a better blocker than Swift, definitely.
It doesn't take much. But I remember in fantasy drafts a couple of years ago, and I know fantasy isn't representative of the NFL gameplay as well, but I was taking him as a legit round one guy because he was a bell cow running back who was very productive in the run and the pass. He has had... Oh, let me bring him up on Pro Football Reference a minute.
I don't know. I would say Swift's becoming a better receiver out of the two. He's having a really good year in terms of his receiving capabilities. I know a lot of it's in garbage time when we're chasing games, but he's still got to catch him, and he's still effective in that role.
I think from what I've seen of Mixon this year, Mixon is a really dependable guy. Like, you know, you can trust him to get that 4, 5, 6 yards, whereas Swift is a little bit more up and down.
So
when Swift makes a cut on someone, Swift looks devastating. But
and Mixon's doing it behind a line that's not great either. So, you know, that raises red flags when you're in opposition. If he can still churn out that production and he's not getting the most amount of help in the world, then it's like, yeah, this is a dangerous guy.
I don't know if you saw the Bengals-Packers game last weekend, but Mixon had a run for a touchdown from like goal line. I think it was the 3 or something, and it was a one cut jump, and it was so lovely. He just left the defender on his ass. It was great. Mixon has back to back 1100 yard rushing seasons, 2018, 2019, at 1168 and 1137. He's never passed 9 total touchdowns in a season, but that's because he's been splitting reps partially, and he's only ever played 16 games once in a season. But in terms of his receiving ability, he's consistently managed to get more than 250 yards in a year as well. So the most yards he's had in a season is 1464 total. So when he wants to be, he can be a very, very productive running back. He has shown things in his career that Swift hasn't done in terms of a full season's worth of productivity, but Swift hasn't really had the opportunity yet. So let's see what happens if Swift can get to the end of the year. But for my part, I think they're pretty comparable in how they play the game. So there we go. Let's move on to their defense. Now, this is a really interesting story because they've been poor historically for some time. And then this season, they've conceded 100 points. That's seventh in the NFL. 1,251 passing yards is 16th, but only six passing touchdowns is fifth. Four interceptions is 10th, and six net yards per attempt is 8th. So they don't concede points. They don't concede many passing yards, passing touchdowns. They force interceptions. And if you do pass it successfully, it's not for very many yards per attempt. 507 rushing yards against them is 10th. Four rushing touchdowns is 10th. And 4.1 yards per attempt against is 13th. So they are efficient against the run, efficient against the pass. On third down, 31 of 73 is 42.5%. That's 18th. So perhaps not the best on third down. And they're not getting into many fourth downs. Three on seven completions is 43% and 11th in the NFL. In the red zone, they also tighten up. Only 9 of 17 possessions end in a score. That's 53%, which is 12th in the NFL. Looking at some of their bigger players, Logan Wilson's really come into his own at the mic this year. Three interceptions, three passes defended, a sack, 47 tackles, 20 of which are solo, a tackle for a loss, and a quarterback hit. Quarterback rating, PFF rating even, of 71.6. The cornerback, Jadobi Awuzie, is their leader. One interception, five passes defended, 15 tackles, 12 solo, one tackle for loss, and a 71 PFF grade. Their big signing in the offseason was the edge player from New Orleans, Trey Hendrickson. One forced fumble, 4.5 sacks, 10 tackles, five solo, three tackles for loss, and nine quarterback hits, but only a PFF grade of 66. And then their big player in the interior stopping those runs, DJ Reader. One sack, 19 tackles, five solo, one tackle for a loss, and three quarterback hits, and a team-leading PFF grade of 82 on that defense. It's a defense with not many stars, but what they do it well, and they do it effectively, and they don't blow it up much, particularly. And you can see it in their games. They conceded 24 against Minnesota, who through 3 weeks were the number one offense in the league. Against Pittsburgh, they conceded 10 against that three-headed attack they had at wide receiver at the time. Against Green Bay, they only conceded 25, and that happened in overtime. It was 22 up until that point. They are performing very, very well against some good offenses, boys.
Yeah, I think they're sneaky good. I think obviously you've got like Hendrickson, I think is a great player. We got after Rodgers, you know, several times last week. Reed has been great in the middle. I think their linebacking core, it's not like the most flashy, but, you know, Logan Wilson, Jermaine Pratt, really good players. I think from a safety point of view, Von Bell and Jesse Bates have looked good, you know, look like they can make an impact, been really solid in the secondary. And, you know, Awuzie has been, I think, probably like their star at cornerback. I think this is a good defense. I think this is the best defense I can remember because normally the Bengals defense, absolute toilet. So I think this is a defense to be worried about. And you know, considering the struggles of the offense in the last few weeks and the players we're missing, this is where I think the game is going to be lost for us.
I mean, Trey Hendrickson was the signing of free agency, you know, out of anywhere, I think. You know, I know he had a massive year last year with the Saints, but, you know, I badly wanted him here and they've got an absolute bargain with him already. I mean, he's already up at, what, 4.5 sacks. Their biggest, you know, their biggest, like, sack maker last year was Lawson. He got 6. He's already basically at that after 5 games. I mean, really, come on. He's at 24 pressures on the season. You know, he's in double figures for sacks and quarterback hits combined. You know, he's got, you know, double the amount of pressures nearly. It's, he's an absolute game changer. When you have a feared edge rusher like that who can just change games for you, it just elevates your whole defense, really. You know, it takes pressure off your secondary when the quarterback's fearing for his life. And, you know, he's going to be, he's the guy to worry about. You know, that sort of production this early on in a season, our offensive line with the injuries that it has, you know, we absolutely need to keep him quiet. If you can keep him quiet somehow, it's going to make your job a lot easier. But as you've said, this solid guys all over there at the minute. They've fixed the team up the right way. You know, they've put money into the defense. They drafted a few guys in as well. But, you know, the good guys they have are just, they're really damn good. So I'd be worried about playing against them here. It's, like you said, they're stingy in the passing game, and our passing game ain't the best anyhow. So that puts a lot of pressure on our run game to come in and get the work done, as it does most weeks. And as we've seen, we concede some big leads, which means we have to stop using the running game. We can't afford for that to happen in this game. There is no way we can get put in a situation where we have to abandon the run game for the passing game, or we're straight up done for. We have to be able to keep running it all game.
I'm gonna predict 2 interceptions by Goff this week. That's my hot take. 2 picks.
So Andre Hendrickson.
I'd take that.
Andre Hendrickson, he is, and I know this is maybe a bit of a hot take, but Trey Hendrickson is Charles Harris in disguise.
Like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, give over. No. His PFF grade's only down because he can't tackle. Every facet of his game is really good. Everyone said he's a one-hit wonder in New Orleans last year. Yeah, he's already nearly broken, you know, the sack record from last year for the Bengals. His production over these last year and a bit has just been phenomenal. You can't deny that.
No, his production's been fantastic. But what you do on third down is what you do on third down. But what you do on first and second down is relevant. And it's what I've been saying about Charles Harris all year. I am consistent on this point. I don't think I'm, you know, beating around the bush with this. Trey Hendrickson is a liability against the run. He is. So if our running game can get going, target Trey Hendrickson. Like, he's the weak link in that line. Against the pass, Goff dropping back, absolutely. Worry about Trey Hendrickson. Situationally, the guy who's going to give you problems. But against the run, against DeAndre Swift, I'm taking Swift. So, you know, Hendrickson is he's not someone I want to come up against every week. I'll say that, you know. It's not like I'm not fearing the guy. But Charles Harris puts on tape what Trey Hendrickson does. He is fearsome when it comes to pass rush. And I don't think you can argue with that. I hope you can't argue with that.
Yeah, but see, that's all well and good, but that means you've got to attack the edge because their defensive line's a lot better at stopping the run. It's a lot easier for the edges against defend against the run when the interior defensive line just shuts up shop. And unfortunately, that's one thing they're really, really good at.
Yeah. Ashley's just commented, what do you expect from the guy who advocates for Trey Flowers' highlights against the run? You're damn right. I am consistent.
You tell him, Ash.
Hey, Ash, he got a sack last week. We can at least make a video of it now. I mean, it'll not be long, but...
Hey, it was a good sack too. It was nice. He completely bull rushed him and fell over the guy and straight into the quarterback's legs.
So Charles Harris has sacks 4 consecutive weeks, and you think he's not as good? So I mean,
he's not as good. He's not as good. Like, it's not a question. It's not a question.
Well, the stats say otherwise.
Move away from the Trey Flowers comparisons, please.
Trey Flowers, if he doesn't agree a new deal in this offseason, should be cut. Like, I can say things as well which are obvious common sense. Like, he does not live up to the contract and the cap value that he's going to be at next year. I'm not some sort of homer for the guy who's just totally blind to the fact that we're paying him too much for what he provides to this team. But he provides something that no one else does. And people just don't appreciate that because it doesn't show up on the stat sheet. But how often have we said, this guy behind the scenes does some really good stuff. It doesn't show up on the stat sheet. Hey, he adds massive value.
Yeah, and you're speaking to a guy who advocates for Aleem McNeil every week because he does exactly the same. I watch closely during games as to what they do and what they bring. I do.
Yeah. I think Trey Flowers is the least of our problems. But
I mean, all I'm thinking about, we're talking about the defense here. Where's the mismatch? Where can we as an offense hit them?
So
because they're really good at defending the run, which is our strength. You know, they're going up against a weakened O-line for us. And yeah, it did well last week, which is fine. But I mean, the secondary is decent. Maybe not against the run, but in coverage it is. But you've got to bypass that defensive line first. So I'm struggling to see where the mismatches are this week.
Two spots for me. Both cornerback positions. So not Chidobe Awuzie, who I highlighted earlier. He's playing really well. But there's two players who start for them or play a lot of snaps for them who have not started so well. One is Mike Hilton, who I really wanted to play here, but bedding into a new team in the slot hasn't had the best of starts. He's been fine, but he's not been some sort of world beater in there. And I think Amon-Ra could give him some problems. The other guy that I think can do this is Khalif Raymond up against Eli Apple. Eli Apple is one of the worst starting cornerbacks in the NFL. And he's not done particularly well this year either. So I think give him a bit of speed. I think I'm going to give him a bit of problem.
Where was Khalif Raymond last week?
The trouble is, we've got a quarterback who's throwing what? 3.5 yards per average per throw. That 3.5 yards doesn't get you to the corners, unfortunately. That's kind of my point here. If we want to attack the weaker corners out there, we need to be taking shots deep and putting pressure on that secondary, but we haven't been doing that. And they've got a fearsome defensive line, which is going to get at Goff, which ain't going to give him the time to throw. You know, this is the first time I'm looking and I'm thinking, you know, they're good against where we're good and the places we can hit them. Do we have the tools to do it? I'm not sure. I think it's going to require a lot of, you know, we're going to need blocking running backs here. We're going to need Kabinda in. You know, we're going to need to put the whole house on blocking Dewey, send one receiver. But it's, you know, kind of what the Bears did to us. Like, I guess that would be the way you'd have to go about it. But you have to wrap him in cotton wool and give him time to throw it. But it's unlikely.
So would you say in terms of X's and O's, Ant, that this is potentially the hardest game we've had so far?
I would, yes. Because in other games, you know, we've come up against not so good defensive lines. The run game can work. It's just the game situation's got away from us a bit. But, you know, I'm just concerned here as to, you know, where we're going to get the success from. Because I say, if Goff could throw deep a bit more, if we could trust him to do that, then, you know, I'd hold out a modicum of hope. But doing these check down passes and that just ain't going to wash against this team. And he's going to be under a shed load of pressure. And, you know, we've got a lot of injuries. So it's just, I don't know, can we get it to Hock? Can we target the linebackers? But, I mean, in fairness, the linebackers have been doing all right there as well. So
linebackers are decent. And they've got a really decent linebacking core.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. It's, you know, I can't even see us throwing it to Hock, and Hock been a mismatch there. I'm struggling to see where the obvious deficient weakness is there for them that we can exploit with what we have. You know, we need that run game to operate, and this is probably one of the best defensive lines we're coming up against for stopping the run. It's going to really come down to this offensive line again, being able to burrow holes in there to give the running backs time to work. But just, you know, from a point of view, just from looking at it analysis-wise, this is not a good matchup for us.
No, I mean, the other thing about against the run is this is one of the best teams against the run from the linebackers. I mean, it's not just the front four, but it's the front seven. They give you massive problems. Couple of comments from inside Twitch. Ashley, in terms of taking advantage of them, says, you got to try some play action. Their linebackers are young. Bring them forward with a fake and then hit the gap between them and the safety, as he thinks that Amon-Ra and Hock on crossing routes over the middle could be a thing. Dan wanted to ask, how did Robert Tonyan do from the Packers against the Bengals last week? The answer to that is not well. One catch for 8 yards and a 59.7 PFF grade. And the news just out that Ashley's just alerted me to, and it might hurt my idea that we might be up Eli Apple. The Bengals have just signed Trey Flowers, the ex-Seattle cornerback. Now, he hasn't had the best season. Oh. He's not particularly good, I don't think. But he could slot straight in.
Upgrade.
It's probably an upgrade. So we shall see. In terms of the Bengals, the injury report has just dropped as well. Thanks to Ashley for updating us while we're here. No practices for Joe Mixon and Donte Smith. Limited practices for center Trey Hopkins and wide receiver Mike Thomas, and then full practice. Cornerback Joe Burrow, cornerback Darius Phillips, and guard Quinton Spain. So Spain, as I highlighted, one of their better guards. He's in full practice, but the fact he's listed a tool perhaps gives us a little bit of hope. Trey Hopkins is one of the worst centers in the league without being limited, but no Joe Mixon and Perrine on the COVID list. I mean, that could make them one-dimensional in this game.
I think the trouble is that's not going to help us score points. It's going to stop them from scoring as many, maybe, if it's one-dimensional, but it's not going to stop us from, you know, scoring. It's not going to help us score, should I say.
I'm going from Alex Anzalone pick six. That's what I want to see.
It could come down to defensive play, giving us good field position against them, so we don't have to go as far. But you know, the run, we say it every week, but the run game is critical in this one. You know, it has to give us a solid foundation, so as Ash says, we can get the play action in there. We can make the simple passes, just long sustained drives. It's not going to be, you know, mind blowing offense, but it's just going to be enough. Burn some clock in the process and keep that offense off the pitch. But, you know, so much is just going to come down to that offensive line and how it holds up. And, you know, it favors them. The battle of the trenches favors them for once. You know, I fancy us against their offensive line, but I also fancy them against ours.
Their biggest hole in their roster is their kicker. Their kicker is shit.
No.
Evan McPherson's
a good kicker. Don't give him that.
Oh, well, hang on. He's only about like 17 or something. He's right young. He was, Pat McAfee interviewed him. He's a kid. He's a boy. That's a bit harsh.
He missed a kick the last week and he actually thought it had gone over. And
yeah, but it looked like it had gone over.
Clearly hadn't. It clearly hit the flag at the top on the other side.
Yeah, but when he kicked it, it looked like it was going straight down the middle. Like, the wind really took it late.
And wasn't his first ever kick like a clutch game-winning one as well? I'm pretty sure. You know,
Crosby missed four kicks in a game. One bad game does not make a bad kick.
In Seifert, we trust.
Siebert's done no wrong, you know, in fairness. I don't want to see anyone moaning about the Lions kicker situation yet because he's given no one any reason not to.
No, I agree. But the fact that we've protected Ryan Santoso on the practice squad again means that the Lions think that this is not over by any means.
Or maybe he's just got a niggling injury that doesn't quite put him on the injury report.
Or they're not worried about the others getting poached because no one's been poached so far. Kickers are more liable to get poached by other teams at short notice.
Ashley's history knowledge, he's a history major, is obviously very, very good. He's just said the kicker's first kick was the game winner over the Vikings. So
I called it. There we go.
Yeah.
I knew there was a reason I liked him.
He's a clutch guy, but he's also got a humongous leg. Like, he's normally money from like 55 plus. He just had a bad day. So, yeah. Anyway, what was I going to talk about? Oh, so I asked you, Ant, whether you thought it was the hardest game so far this season in terms of X's and O's. And I mean, my motivation for that was what you were talking about just before then. But also, Jeff Risden said he thought it was the hardest game so far this season in terms of how they match up against us. And I wholeheartedly agree with it. I mean, that four-headed monster. I mean, you've got to put in Azuma in there as well. Everyone else we've just listed, Higgins and Chase and what have you. I mean, that's horrific for this secondary that's missing its cornerback from the preseason. It's cornerback 1, 2, and 4. And then Will Harris is there still. Like, Will Harris has improved from a human being who's trying to play football to a borderline really bad player. And that's a stark improvement. But that doesn't mean that he should be playing. So, you know, I really fear for their secondary. They've shown us no reason for me to doubt them so far. I think our secondary, albeit young and inexperienced, has actually really shown up so far. Last week was excellent by them up until 30 seconds to go in the game. And you know what? Sometimes you shit the bed with 30 seconds to go. The pressure is high and they're really young. I don't blame them. But yes, FTP, Debt Fan Man, fuck Packers, sorry. I shouldn't have said Crosby. But, you know, the secondary has given me no reason to doubt them apart from the fact that they're young. But this Burrow, to all of them, just strikes fear into the heart of me.
But Burrow's not super flashy in the way that, like, Josh Allen is, or I'm trying to think of other kind of rookies that have really kind of... Or, you know, like in terms of some of the throws that like Mahomes and Jackson have pulled off. Burrow is just like solid and dependable, looks composed in the pocket, has got a good arm, can make really good throws, but he just kind of doesn't have that kind of swag that like some of the other guys do. But that doesn't mean to say he's not a great quarterback who could develop into something really special over the next 2 or 3 years. He can't be 100% fit. This will still be like a rehabbing and strengthening in terms of like his injury. So I'm sure he's not 100% back to his best. And his confidence will have taken a knock. But the O-line is definitely not as bad as last year. And if we give him time to throw, he will absolutely torch us.
I mean, Burrow's been, like you say, fighting for his life since he entered the NFL. It's you can't do your best work as a quarterback when you're always on the run, getting chased down, getting hit all the time. So we've probably not even seen the best version of him yet, which is scary because, you know, he's doing well in a really bad situation. But that's the only mismatch we have in this game is our defensive line against that offensive line. And any credibility we want for a win rests on us absolutely dominating that from start to finish. You know, if we can't win that, if we can't win that matchup, you know, say 75% of the time, all the game, then we're going to struggle. We need to get hits on Burrow quick and limit what he can do and limit his throwing time. Give the rookies a chance in the secondary to work. So, you know, that's the only way I can see us coming away with something on this. It is just an absolute matchup hell, but on paper, you know, how we've been playing recently, we'd look at the Bengals as overall team quality and say, you know, they're a good side, but it's our best chance of a win. And I know I've seen a lot of fans say that they reckon we can win this weekend, but it's the wrong team. It really is the wrong team.
We've done the thing that we've done a couple of times now this season on the pod is that we've been on an hour and a half, and I don't think we've talked about Jared Goff.
Who? I don't want to talk about Jared Goff. Like, I know we're a Lions pod and we're meant to talk about the team, but I don't want to talk about the quarterback. Can we not?
The thing is, you know, we need to talk. We're talking about the keys to win here, but, you know, he's not one of, well, obviously he is. He needs to play well, but...
This is a safe space, man. This is a safe space.
Okay, using Ant's analogy, Jared Goff is a guy who has a bunch of keys, but none of them open the door he's in front of. Like, that's how I feel about him. Like, he's a guy who has a lot of tools, but it's not the one you want.
He's like a bad janitor.
The thing is, the keys to the game this week lie with the running backs, and it lies on the defensive line. It doesn't rely on Goff as much. Goff can have a great game, but we can still lose. But we need the running backs and we need the defensive line to have great games to give us a chance to win. And, you know, I think that's the interesting thing there. So,
I don't know.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Are you saying that, like, in terms of like being a superhero, Goff is like Hong Kong Fui? In that his alter ego is just like a really bad janitor.
I haven't watched enough Hong Kong Fury.
You need to watch some Hong Kong Fury. Classic, yeah. 80s he's, cartoon.
He's like Scrappy Doo. You know, just, you know, full of a lot of heart and that, but, you know, everyone else has to, you know, everyone else has to do it for him.
I kind of want to say that he's Superman because his alter ego is someone who can barely see past his hand unless he's got his glasses on. But I don't know.
The problem is that the QB is the key to any offense, and you know, Goff just can't exploit the weaknesses of any team. That's the issue. You know, he just doesn't have the capabilities. All he can do is be an opportunity for the opposition's defense.
No, so I'm going to push back on I'm going to push back on that a bit. So Goff has shown that in quarters of games, he can be the guy. Like, it's not like he hasn't shown that ability. What he has shown is that he cannot sustain that through a game. Now, if he decides that he's going to turn up and sustain that through a game, he's shown drives where he has completely taken apart defenses, where he's had consecutive passes 15, 20 yards deep. There's one I specifically remember where he had a Raymond catch over the middle, then a Cephas catch on the outside, and a Raymond catch over the middle for a touchdown. And it was like, oh, he can do it. So,
but he can't finish them.
No, he can't finish them. And
that's,
if that, you listen,
and that's
to,
a big thing for a quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing is that coming into this season, one of the things I consistently heard from Luke G's Discord from Rams House was Jared Goff had one of the highest efficiency ratings in the red zone since he'd come into the league. What the fuck's happened to that guy? Like, he's awful if he gets within the 20 so far. That's his biggest failing. Jeff Risden mentioned, I keep referencing him because it's my favourite pod. Jeff Risden mentioned that if you had taken into account fumbles in the same way that you take into account interceptions in quarterback rating, that Jared Goff would be the second lowest rated quarterback in the league so far this season. The fact that he isn't means that because statistically he's been fine, that his quarterback rating is good. And it's like, okay, but that's masking a lot, isn't it? Sorry, rant. What up, Dota? Cap Ice Cold. Luke G made an appearance earlier as well. Appreciate everyone who is watching live, listening on the audio. Appreciate you very much. Sorry, boys.
No, not at all. Yeah, and
I wouldn't disagree with that.
Goff just can't finish. Go on, Steve.
No, I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Cool. Fair enough. Oh. Right.
I don't know. He's just not proven that he can finish the drives off, and it's killing us points wise. You know, there's so many game critical situations that we've messed up. If we get chances in this game, we need to take every single one, because I don't think we're going to get too many, you know, where we're going to be in the red zone, where we're going to be able to drive up there and put in touchdowns. We really need to make them count. They need to cut out these silly mistakes this week, pure and simple, if we want a bit in this game.
Okay, so let's maybe talk about what we want to see from this game then. Win or lose, what do we want to see them do? And I'm going to start off by saying, I want to see us trust the run. When it comes to clutch moments in the game, get the ball in, if Williams is playing, get the ball in Williams' hands. If he's not, get the ball in Swift's hands, get the ball in Jefferson's hands. Our run blocking is great. We haven't trusted it on 3rd and 2, 4th and 1. We tried it once in the opening game of the season. Jamal Williams stumbled on 4th and 1, got turned away. And I don't remember us trying a short yardage situation again. But that's the defining point about this team, is that that is what we can do. So let's trust what we're good at. If you do that and we lose, I'm okay with it. But I don't want to see us entrusting a game situation to Goff. And I say that in the knowledge that last week, when it came up clutch, Goff actually managed to deliver in the red zone twice by converting when we turned the ball over from the 20 and then the two-point conversion. Like, he's shown he can do it, but he's shown he can't do it more often than not. Let's get the ball in the running back's hands. What do you boys want to see us try next week? Sorry, Sunday, even.
You know, I'd just advocate what I have done a lot of weeks here. I'd rather trust the cornerbacks in man coverage against their wide receivers. You know, I'll let that matchup go. I'll bring the safeties up. I'll send the house in pressure to Joe Burrow. that offensive line is creaky and can be exploited. And I just want to be all over him like a rash, make him uncomfortable, stop him from implementing his game plan on us, because, you know, that's where we have the mismatches. Aleem against that center, you know, Levi in there against the guards. No, I want. Plays there. If we get some hits on him and disrupt the way that offense plays, then we've got half a chance. So, you know, I want safeties up. I want the linebackers in. I want them all creating pressure there. And I will just trust the guys at corner to try and do the best job they can, because they've shown they can be relied upon in certain situations. At least if they give the receptions away, they don't give up much yak in a lot of cases. I know there will be some examples of when they have, but for the most part, they're pretty solid. So safeties up, send a lot of pressure. Hurt Burrow. Well, not hurt him, but just pressure him. Stop him from playing.
As Ryan said, and Ashley's just reminded of, Ryan said that he wants one of our rushers to punch Burrow in the throat. Maybe not literally, but it's kind of what Ants just said. Steve, what do you want to see from the Lions in this game? What do you want to see them try?
I want to see TJ Hockenson. Because I don't think we've got the wide receiver group to hurt what's a pretty decent Bengals secondary. I'm not convinced with a banged-up O-line of our and possibly Jamal Williams out. I don't want to see them thrash Swift to death and potentially, you know, see Swift being injured because he's played 70 snaps and we've just been like running him up the gut trying to get some yards. I think this is where TJ Hockenson has to step up. And that's not a bit harsh on Hockenson, but Goff needs to step up in terms of targeting him and finding him. So Goff needs to make sure that he is going through his progressions and he's looking for Hockenson, because Hockenson against, you know, a decent linebacker core, but not the best in the league by any means, that's where we're going to get some yards. So Hockenson needs to have 100 yards plus game. Hockenson needs to be the red zone target. And, you know, Khalif Raymond, great breakout game 2 games ago and then disappears last week. He needs to come back in and make some plays as well. But Ant's absolutely spot on. What Ant said, I couldn't put it any better on defense. We've got to be aggressive. We've got to blitz. We've got to put pressure on Burrow.
I've got another one for offense. So, sorry, did you want to come in on that, Ant?
I was just about to say, I want to see Jamar Jefferson as well. I've waited long enough. I am ready for him to come in and do his work. And to be fair, you know, his specialty at Oregon State was, you know, finding gaps in situations where there weren't any. He's probably one of the cleverest running backs we've got in terms of being able to find those gaps. And if room is going to be at a premium, that's his wheelhouse. He's used to been behind a bad offensive line as well, which doesn't give him much to work with. You know, this would be the ideal type of game for him. And he's got the speed to get outside and hit him on the edge as well. So first, I want to see him activated. And second, I want to see him used, because I think he could have a good game against this Bengals defense. I genuinely do, from what I've seen.
So the other thing I want to see on offense is I want to see the Lions get away from 11 personnel more often than they're doing. 11 personnel has been our base offense. That means we're playing 3 wide receivers most of the time. And yet, if you listen to what most people say about the Lions wide receivers, they're not very good. And yet they've been okay. I'm not going to dumb down the Lions wide receivers because I think they've been fine. But you know what? When our strengths is under the running backs, and when our tight ends are as good as they are, and Fells hasn't had a great year, but he's not been given much opportunity either, I want to see us in 12 personnel. I want to see us in 21 personnel. I want to see us in 22 personnel. I want to see us in 23 personnel. You know, I try something a bit different, but 11 personnel quite often isn't working for us. Be a bit different. Try something else.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, in honor of SW Lion as well, I'd want to say let's see more 2-back sets.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that does seem to work. And, you know, we've been chatting a lot on Twitter this week, bless him. And, you know, I feel like I owe him that. I want to see 2-back sets in there. And, you know, because we do seem to do better with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And use Kabinda. And use Kabinda.
Use Kabinda.
We're really going to need someone. We're really going to need someone like Kabinda this week if we're going to try and, you know, make some gaps for the running backs to go through. He's going to be critical to it.
So Dan's just said it's tough because outside of 11 personnel, you're not going to see Amon-Ra very much. But I disagree. You can line up Amon-Ra wherever you want in 12 personnel. If you've got two running backs out there and a tight end, you've got two wide receivers out there. They don't have to be both wide outside guys. They don't have to be. You could line up Amon-Ra. You could line up both wide receivers on one side with one on the outside and one as a slot. You could line up one on the outside and one on the other side as a slot. Amon-Ra can play outside. I'm going to die on this hill as well. Amon-Ra has got enough to play on the outside. So, you know, that might limit his route tree to stuff kind of over the middle and quite shallow if he's playing on the outside. But he can do that. Or slants, hitches. He's got the route running ability to do that. So
it depends how it affects his development. If it's better for his development to be in the slot and perfect that, because that is presumably where he's going to make his bread and butter in the coming years. You know, that's where his eye's best. You know, it's not every year we're going to go without main receivers. So yeah. It entirely depends. I would like to see him develop at the position we're going to use him long term.
Yeah, fair. Okay, right, boys, let's get down to it. This isn't our final points prediction. It's not our final game prediction. We'll release that on the day of the game just to see how things shake up. But an early prediction for this game, Ant, let's start with you. How do you see this one going?
Not well. And it's nothing to do with, you know, the team. I love the fight this team is showing. You know, the development of the rookies. I'm encouraged by what I see. But as I've made the point of during the show, we're just in a matchup nightmare against these guys. And Dan Campbell loves to highlight this. If you're in a matchup nightmare, you've got such a big advantage in games. You know, the offensive line is battered and bruised. P&I still got an ankle problem. We're missing our two other top guys on there. And we really need them to come through and be able to open the run game up this week. So that's hanging by a thread. And then, you know, the mismatch between the receivers and the secondary. We can negate this by sending pressure and sending everything against Burrow, but you know, it's going to require a lot to go right, and I don't like the matchup ability. So I'm going to say it's going to be something along the lines of 27-17 to the Bengals. That's my early one. Just while I've got like my thinking hat on, when the Kool-Aid starts to hit, I'll try and find more ways to get us a win. I just don't like the matchup we've got on this time. It's the wrong team at the wrong time.
What about you, Steve?
I couldn't agree more. Matchup hell is a good way to describe this. I think the Bengals, I think they're going to end up with a record of probably like 9-8 or something like that. I think they're just... They're one or two players on their O-line away from being a playoff contention team. And I think they're just always going to fall a bit short. And maybe next year is the year for them. But I still think they're a good team. And I think they've got too much all round for us. I think it's maybe not going to be the highest scoring game. So, yeah, maybe 24-13 to the Bengals.
Yeah, that's very similar to where I think we're at, actually. I was going to pick pretty much exactly that scoreline, 24-10, 24-13. That's exactly how I see it going. I don't see the Bengals scoring a lot of points. They have big, deep threats, but we've seen that in the stats, at least, their offense doesn't really get it going very much, but when they do, they get it deep. They're not a very consistent offense, especially short. So protect deep, drop your corners deeper, bring your safeties up a bit and blitz hard on your line and your linebackers and just go for hell. But it's hard to see how we're going to score, especially if Williams is out, because Williams has been so good early doors. You don't really want to use Swift up early.
Let's bring Jefferson in and let's not, absolutely what I don't want to see is Swift picking up an injury that is going to put him on IR and he's not going to be ready for the start of the next season. Let's get Jefferson in and give him a chance.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think just the most important thing of all is even if we don't win, I want to see this defensive line do well, because that's what we're basing our team on for the upcoming years. We've spent a lot on it And even without our best edge rushers in there, we've still got good ones there. So I want to see them have success. I was disappointed that they didn't have more against the Bears, but the Bears packed the box. And, you know, we can't allow them to do that this time. If they're going to pack the box, we've got to send more men in against them. So, you know, I don't want to see that repeated again. I just want to see the guys left in single coverage deep if they're going to do that and send more people after Burrow. But I do really want to see the defensive line do well this week. Otherwise, you know, some question marks may arise from this.
I mean, I completely agree. One thing from Aaron Glenn's press conference earlier on today that gives me pause and concern is that he talked about the fact that things aren't going to go well for you if you expose this young secondary to one-on-one coverage. You know, he wants to protect them. But I'm with Ant. The best way of protecting them is by taking the quarterback out of the equation by hitting him. Like, don't give the secondary a chance to make a play on the ball because the quarterback gets rushed. You know, you got to give him something to think about. I know it's a philosophical debate, but it seems to be that every defensive coordinator likes to go pre-vet, when pretty much every fan wants to rush five in the same situation. Now, I'd split the difference and just rush four and say that's going to be enough to give you at least a bit of a problem while adding players to that secondary in your defense. But, you know.
But that's it. If we were given sort of a hypothetical of, you know, would we exchange, you know, them scoring twice early for getting five, six good hits on Burrow and roughing up for the rest of the game, meaning he's not at his best, I'd probably take that rather than just, you know, playing cautiously all game and letting him dissect us over the course of a game. You know, I'd sooner give up the big plays early while we're still in it, but hurt, you know, get the pressure on him, because it'll help us later in the game as things go along. And we know this team's going to fight till the end. And, you know, it didn't look like we'd get anything, you know, the other week. You know, we were terrible on offense, but one chance came up, the defense got a turnover, we made it count. So, you know, it's critical that we're in the game at the end. So I'd rather just give a few points early. I don't want to see us meekly just be dissected by him by play action, deep passes. I'm fed up with that now. I'd just rather ditch the conservatism and I'd rather just take in the aggression. It's a throwaway season after all. Let's see what the D-line can do. Let's see what the edge can do. Put some big plays if need be.
I think one of the kind of emerging stories for me is that when we talked about Goff, this being like a kind of audition for him at the start of the season, I kind of didn't really buy it because I thought, oh, they're committed to Goff, you know, contracts, you know, the kind of cap, they are committed to Goff and we're going to see two seasons of Goff. But I think Goff has been so poor this season, just in five games, I can't see them not making a move at QB and giving Goff another season if he carries on playing like this. So I kind of feel that the next few games are almost like an extended audition for Goff, and he needs to improve quick.
Yeah.
Sorry, Matt. I'm just going to say, there's one thing we've not taken into consideration here is what if Goff does struggle early on and Blau's subbed in? I mean, Blau has shown he can make the deep. I know I'm not resting my high hopes on him here, but the dynamicism of our offense changes if Blau comes in because he can throw a bit deeper. Maybe he can get after those corners a little bit more and get on those mismatches that we want a little bit. Now, again, I ain't pinning my hopes on him or saying this is the be-all and end-all, but that is a possibility. You know, if Goff has a bad first few series, then we could see Blau. And maybe, as I say, just the scales swing a little bit because he's got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy that.
Yeah, I think nightmare scenario for the Lions would be carry on playing Goff. The O-line gets weaker. You know, injuries mount up. The O-line gets weaker. Goff gets injured. And then we're going into next season or the off-season with an injured Goff who's effectively untradeable. That would be the nightmare scenario for me.
Yeah, that is the darkest timeline, for sure.
No, I was just about saying, the other thing is, you know, when Blau was last in the team, I've never really advocated for him, but when he was last playing in the Lions team, that was a team that had given up on this season, you know, under Patricia there. But he did all right in relief. Mm. I'm just trying to think of potential mismatches of the ability here to do something different. Hell, just bring him in in some plays, if you want to do a little something a little more fancy, which Goff can't, bring Blau in for a few plays. See what you can do with him. Mix it up.
I'm someone who really, really likes Blau, but he's not as good as Goff. He just isn't. But in terms of what he can do, he does have he's more willing to go for the deep ball, but he also can escape the pocket pretty well. So, you know what, I have sympathy with that opinion, but I just don't like it because Goff's got touch. Like, he's got a really, really lovely touch pass. And I know that was what was sold to us when he came here, but he has shown that he's got it in these last few games. It's just not as consistent as we want it to be.
It's just a touch pass that goes 4.5 air yards.
And he can't finish drives to score points. This, you know, he can do all he wants in the world, but if we can't score points because of his ability to hold on to the ball or pass properly, you know, that it doesn't matter how good he is going down a field.
Maybe. And he's a fumbler.
Yeah, okay, the fumbles are the biggest thing for me. In terms of the passing, I do not know whether it's a chicken or an egg situation, but part of it is Anthony Lynn. The number of designed passes that he has drawn up on the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage or 1 yard ahead of the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. Last week, we had something like 8 or 9 attempts at a 3rd down, and none of the passes were beyond the line to gain. But half of them or so were designed passes behind the line, and that's going to hurt Goff's attempted air yards. Now, is that because Goff is not good enough to make the more complicated plays? Is it because that's how Anthony Lynn wants to run that offense? Is it a bit of both? Is it that that's what the matchup thing, you know, Lynn thinks the matchup says you need to do? Is it because he hasn't got the wide receiver weapons that he doesn't trust the receivers there? Like, there's so many things that go into this. I don't think it's as simple as Goff can't throw very far, because so much of this offense is I'm throwing a wide receiver screen. It's a really hard one. I don't expect you guys to kind of come back and have an answer straight away, but like, Lynn is...
So if only I did have an answer.
Yeah. Ashley's just said, if that's true, why isn't Goff checking out with him for some better plays at the line? And the answer to that is, he's incapable of doing that, and that's why he had to rush to the line in LA so that the head coach could call the plays for it. Like, Goff isn't good enough at that aspect of the game to do it.
Fair.
Right. Anything you guys want to get off your chest before we get off this?
I think that's about everything for this week, isn't it?
All right.
There's much else there. It's just, yeah. It's going to be an interesting week, let's put it that way. If we do have some success in this, or, you know, we make a close game of it, hell, if we win, then this will be a hell of a win if we do. I'll put it that way. It's not, you know, but, yeah, it's just going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's good for me is that I think I predicted 5-12 at the start of the season, and I think I predicted this as the first win of the season, and now I just feel massively insecure about that. In fact, I think I was wrong. So that's what's kind of like gutting for me, is that even though I kind of predicted a fairly bleak prospect, I think we're now sub-bleak.
I mean, I suppose the one thing we've not mentioned yet is, you know, seeing the mentality of the team. You know, now that we've been suckered by a second field goal, had a win snatched away, how does the team react again? You know, because they did first time, they came back from the disappointment, and they're still battling hard. I think I'd like to see them just come out and be really aggressive this week and take out all that frustration on the Bengals. I would just love to see the quick start and see what we can do.
I don't see the team teetering in terms of morale yet. I don't see that in their play, and I don't think we'll see it this week, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think the only positive for me this week is that the Bears are playing the Packers, and I think after this brief Bears flurry of hope, I think that's going to be thoroughly crushed this week. Unfortunately, by the Packers. I'd like it to be someone other than the Packers to turn the lights out on the Bears, but yeah, it will be amusing listening to the wailing coming out of Chicago on Monday.
All right.
I was just about to say, I'm just going to be interested to see the coaching this week, see what sort of game plan they come up with to win this one, because they're going to really have to get the thinking caps on this week to be able to get us something out of this one. So hopefully they listen to our advice here, although we know very little. But aggressive defense, lots of TJ Hockenson and lots of Jamar Jefferson as well, please. I'm not asking that much with it. Please.
So one thing I want to highlight, and it's something that I'm taking from the DLP, but they've been on this campaign since it happened, and I'm right with them too. If you are going to Ford Field on Sunday, you cannot let them screw us out of a false start penalty. Everyone needs to come together like it's a Royal Rumble, count down from five. When it gets to five, when the Bengals are on offense, I want to hear you loud and proud counting that down, because I will be fucked if they beat us because a false start is not called. I want them to be faked out by the fact that we're chanting it down. And then you know what? Start from six. Start from three. Fuck them up a bit in the second half. You know, really play with it. But do not let the refs screw us as much as you can. Get loud. Disrupt Cincinnati. And that might give us a bit of an edge.
And count down the play clock as well so that they can't give them an extra 2 seconds to hit a field goal or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. There's going to be a watch party in person this Sunday. If you are a UK-based Lions fan, I'm going to the London game, 2:30 UK time. That is, I have no idea what that is, 9:30 ET, 6:30 in the morning on the West Coast. We have the two worst teams in the NFL right now, in the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Miami Dolphins playing. And thank you for sending four of the worst six teams in the league to our shores. That's great stuff. I'm really looking forward to the game simply because I think it's going to be a terrific match between two absolutely terrible teams. And following that game, I'm heading straight across London to get to the Hippodrome Casino. There's going to be several Lions guys there too. If you are in the UK and you want to watch Bengals at Lions and the rest of the Sunday slate, get yourself down there. We've got an event on the Facebook group, which is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. Hit us up in there. We'll arrange a spot to meet. Get in there for the start of the game. Have a few drinks. Have a bit of a party, win or lose. It's going to be great to have the first modern era Lions meet up in the UK, and hopefully it becomes a more regular occurrence. But let us know if you want to do that. As we said at the top of the show,
Or if you want to hang with really two cool guys online, then me and Steve will be online doing our own little watch party as well. So, you know, the cooler you are, the better. That's what we are there.
The Royal Lions Northern chapter.
Yeah, the forgotten sons who've been left out of this one because it's just been organised so far south.
Also the wall.
So, exactly, you know, where we, you know, still get by horse and cart and stuff like that. That's how we roll up here. Not like these fancy Southerners.
I'm just still hung up on the irony that the NFL have sent four of the six worst teams over to London, but not the Lions.
Sucks. Absolutely sucks.
I know. Wanted to see that one there. And join us on Twitter as well. You're all doing good numbers, so please do that. It's really good fun.
Yeah, so Ashley's going to be on Discord with you guys for the watch party. Ant's going to be there. Steve's going to be there. Join the Discord. Hit us up DMs on Twitter. We'll give you a link. You can join one of the more fun Lions chats you can have out there in the World Wide Web. Don't forget, as we said at the top of the show, Royal the Lions College Football Podcast was recorded just before this show. It's going to be dropping at some point in the next couple of days. You won't want to miss that with the falling of a Titan this week just gone. And then our next episode will be on Monday, Bengals at Lions review show. So don't forget to check in for that on our socials. Don't forget as well to hit us up on Royal the Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And that Facebook group again is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. Got new articles coming up all the time on RoyalTheLionsUK.com. I took in a quarterly review, so that looked at the first four games and where we are at so far. It was fairly comprehensive and got a load of reads and comments. So hit that up. Let me know what you think. otherwise, just remains for me to thank my co-host Anthony Fitzpatrick, Steve Collins. My name's Matthew Turner. Thank you to everyone in the chat. Thank you to you guys for listening. If you review us as well, give us 5 stars. We'll give you a shout out on the next episode. But for now, let's go Lions. One pride.
One pride.
One pride.